Hello, everyone. Welcome back to another episode of Wellspring Words, the podcast. This is your host, Nkem, and happy to have you listening to today's episode or this week's episode or whenever you're listening to this, because podcasts are timeless and we're happy about that. And if it's your first time listening to this podcast, please know that it is a podcast about wellness, spirituality, and writing and creative expression. And this season, in season four, I'm excited to bring on guests who are creating things in life, but to speak to them as creators and think about like what is it like to access that sense of creative abundance, of building something, of making something out of nothing, or following a vision or a plan or an idea? And what is the whole process of that? And then what is it that we're creating, and how does that like impact the world or influence the world? So let's see how this conversation goes, because like all of these podcasts, they are free flowing and we just try to be really authentic with it. So I'm happy to have our guest today, Ajay, and I will allow her to introduce herself. Welcome, Ajay.
Thank you so much, Nkem. Hi, everyone. I'm Ajay. I guess my introduction is, I'll start off with like, I'm a sensitive being. I feel like oftentimes we start off with occupation, and I think I want to make just sense for individuality first. And mm-hmm. then I would list like, I'm a sweater designer, and I'm also a freelance writer, blogger, and I'm working on writing a nonfiction book.
Yes. Like so many beautiful things there. When you say you're a sensitive being these days, how is that showing up for you?
I think for a really long time, I've always been that individual, but for a long time, based on how I was conditioned, I always suppressed it. And it was just like, it wasn't looked at as, I don't know, strong, the number one word, you know, by just a lot of like close circle family, you know, friends. And it was often something I even projected myself.
Yeah.
Because I didn't like leave room for that. So I think like I'm in a space now of just like, it's okay, like to be vulnerable. It's okay to express how you feel deeply about multiple things. And yeah, so I just continue allowing myself to be in that, because even though I'm allowing that space, because I've been in the opposite space for so long, it's hard to like always fully step into it. And be okay with that.
Right. And actually, you know, we met on Instagram through your account, Notes for Self-Love.
Notes to Self-Love notes. Throw it in that love of girl there.
Yeah. You know, but that really, at the time when I was starting Wellspring Words, or just kind of like meeting new people through Wellspring Words, your account was one that I found somehow and resonated with, because it just felt authentic. You know, I feel like if there is a space to express your sensitivity and to create community around it, Instagram can be useful for that, because you can filter out any of those messages that kind of tell you that being sensitive is not welcome, and you can create a space where it is welcome, which is what Wellspring Words is. It's a place for us sensitive people to like sit around and be sensitive, but sensitive with the strength, right? Because to vocalize and to share your sensitivities in the way that you do, in the way that I do, is a very, very strong act. Like you have to have some sort of burning passion inside to share that and not just keep it inside anymore, right? So like, how has that account supported you? Because it's been a little while since we connected there, and I feel like the stuff that you share just becomes deeper and deeper, you know? So tell us a little bit about that account. Like what made you want to start it, and how is that supporting you these days?
So I think that account started in a very dark place. I remember I started it in the midst of COVID, probably like May 2020, around that. And at the time, like, I lost my job, like the industry was trash. And then the world was just falling apart on so many ways. And I think it was just so much internal healing I needed to do. And I had started a blog initially. And I feel like that was a really cool place to, okay, how do I promote the blog? And I kind of used 2-in-1, but then I actually became more in love with talking to myself in third person. And I would use like Dear Baby Girl, and I would speak to a specific thing that I'm going through
with a post-it note.
With a post-it note, and like I'd take the photo of the note, but I'm right behind it, but you don't see my face. So in a way, it was one of those things that I didn't really realize the impact it would have and it would carry, of just like how much other people it also spoke to that were really in similar spaces. And I think that it was just one of the tools for really like on my healing journey, you know? And it was one of those things where like, okay, like it's okay to put down that guard. I think that I was in the beginning spaces of like letting that go. Like this too is beautiful. This too is a strong asset of yourself. Like your vulnerability actually is your superpower.
Yeah, absolutely. No, I totally agree with that. And it is sad to recognize how, especially when we realize like how much of a superpower it is to be a sensitive, vulnerable person who has the capacity to like hold so much feeling and energy from the people around us, from the world around us. It's hard to know that in the past that was looked upon as a bad thing, when we know that if we can sort of manipulate it for good, then so much good can happen in our lives. But also important to recognize that we're not victims of that, right? Like, especially when we're in a position of changing the narrative for ourselves, like,
right.
You got to be careful of that victim mentality sometimes, especially as sensitive people, because it is easy to go into that. Oh, woe
it's very
is me,
easy.
Self-pity,
it's like every,
crying all the time.
No, it is. And I feel like I used to like, that used to be the other version of myself, you know, because it just never felt like there was space. It felt very black and white. I didn't really know how to like manage it, maneuver it, you know, in ways that like, I could really be like 10 toes down on what I'm saying and how I'm feeling, you know, of just like, you know, a lot of my space and world is often black or POC and this, that. And like, you know, in those spaces, it's even more amplified of like, you can't show that, right? We're in such constant survival mode that we don't have time for that, you know? And it's just kind of like, no, what if I made time for that? You know, what if I like took the time to dig in and owned it, and then also write the narrative for other people to own that too? And I thought that like, with that space of me doing my own healing, like it would be like leading by example, you know? So I'm not dragging people in this change. It's still a choice of theirs, you know? But I do think that like it starts a bigger conversation of just like, it's okay to make space for this person. Like you're not less than. This is actually like a big strength.
And speaking of survival mode, like the ability to be in our vulnerability and hold the depth of our feelings, which, I mean, if we're human beings, we have such a deep innate capacity to feel, because we're all connected with each other and connected through everything. I feel like when it comes to survival mode, sometimes that part is overlooked, but I find it to be the most visceral thing. Like if you don't know what your emotions are controlling you.
Right. You know? Yeah, no. And I feel like I used to be feeling like I was freaking drowned from my damn emotions. You know, I was just like swimming in them, and I'm just like, I don't know what to do. And then it brings you back to like that victim mindset. And it's just like, you're allowed to feel, but now don't let the feelings consume you. Right. You're allowed to feel, but like, learn how to like learn from those feelings.
I think ride the wave,
teaching you.
Yeah.
Like, I think it's always just like, it goes in extremes. And then again, it's like, there's very little conversation for like emotional awareness, intelligence, and emotional regulation.
Yeah.
So I think there's just so much levels to it where, like I said, it's just, it's so much layers of like unraveling of healing, unraveling of like, this is who I am in the mirror, and this is enough.
Yeah. This is enough. And well, I mean, at this season of the podcast, I'm bringing in more of the somatic experience, because I mean, the podcast is a community thing, but it's also my personal project. And since season one, when I lived in Abu Dhabi and I was like in the very beginning of my spiritual deepening, spiritual awareness and awakening journey, and now I've studied so much more and have leaned so much more into the embodied experience of healing, or coming back to yourself, or opening up into your own light and just shining brightly without. It sounds nice on the surface, but it's really can be very painful and very extreme, as you said, very intense when you're in these moments of like, okay, I know that there's an emotional wave coming through, or there's something that I'm feeling literally in my gut and I feel it rising through my body. Everyone's embodied experience is different, but maybe this resonates with somebody. Right. Like, feel this feeling in the pit, the core of my body just rising through, and I need to cry. Maybe I don't even know why I'm crying. It doesn't have to do with my life per se, but maybe it's like global things that are happening, or somebody told me a story that now I can't shake. It's within me. I have like taken in the essence of that really sad or scary or traumatic story that I heard or saw, and I need to release it from my body. And that sense of that feeling, that like that embodied somatic feeling, can be really scary for people to let go and allow that thing to come through. Because at the height of it, at the height of that thing, that feeling, it's almost like, oh my God, am I going crazy? Like, am I gonna make it through? Time and again, when my body moves through these things, through the healing process, it's like 5 seconds, 6 seconds, ten seconds max of this intense, just like everything just feels like wild. And then it's like clear skies. And it's like, oh my God, I need to sleep, or I need to masturbate, or I just need to like do something and just relax a little bit. And you're just zonked out afterwards. But again, as you said, the unraveling the layers of healing and allowing that to be okay, because right now it's not okay, right? In many circumstances and situations,
it's still a big fight. And I think that I think healing and allowing yourself to be authentic to your core is an acquainted skill. The more you do it, the easier it gets. Absolutely. But you have to be committed to continuously doing it, you know?
Yeah.
And it's uncomfortable, but I think it's in those uncomfortable spaces where like you learn the most, like in the space where I started my like Instagram blog. Like it was just in a space that I was like heavily doing so much work on myself. Like I was journaling excessively, doing guided meditation. Like I was just doing so much things that worked on the internal aspect of me.
Yeah.
So I do feel like in so many other ways, it built me up in other seasons where I was like, wow, it feels like, where did this come from? But like, I worked.
You created that.
Yeah.
Yeah. It didn't come out of nowhere. It didn't come out of nowhere.
Exactly.
That. Right. Yeah. And that's beautiful. Congratulations, by the way, because I mean, I could see it in your spirit and your smile that you feel light. I don't know what you're carrying these days or what, but you know, we're always carrying something, and maybe you're carrying some things that are heavier than you want them to be, but maybe you have a larger capacity now to carry those things because of all of that work that you did, the cultivation that you did with yourself to be able to carry tough things. Because I feel like the more that we heal, of course, the more capacity we have. It doesn't mean that bad things aren't going to happen, bad in quotes.
Absolutely.
Right. It just means that we have the capacity to understand them and understand the wisdom that comes with it, rather than it just being.
Yeah, it's really just like the tools, you know. And I think that like I never want to make it sound like, you know, in the beginning of the journey, I was kind of like, oh, you know, all my close people, I was like, oh, you know, you need to work on this, or you need to, and I'm like, girl, like you carrying them, and that's not your job, you know, to carry anybody. And in a way, like, you know, I have very deep innate fixer traits. So it's just very like, I feel like as a child, like I wasn't always getting the emotional support I always wanted. Right. Yeah. And I always felt like, told Ajay, you're overthinking it. You know, Ajay, like all of these things is bigger than what it was occurring. And nobody really sat there to try to understand what I was feeling. And I think that like in multiple of my relationships, whether it be familial or platonic or romantic, it becomes, I've seen myself in spaces where it's like, I'm carrying that. Like I will carry what they're going through emotionally. And I didn't realize how much that took from me.
Yeah.
And also like the one-sided relationships it would create. And, you know, to find your purpose in those things is very dangerous because it leaves you feeling very, very empty.
Yeah.
So I feel like there was, like I said, I feel like the path of just emotional healing and coming to that space, it is so subjective. So I never want to tell people do what I do because I've been there before, and I don't feel like it's always helping people. It's actually, it may hinder them. So now what I do is like when people tell, like they knew I worked on something and they're like, yo, what did you do for that? I'm like, okay, here, I got this to support you or whatever. But
yeah, it's like
I'm
a resource.
Really, like that's like I'm in the capacity of like really understanding what is it to be a supporter.
No, I like that. Going from a fixer to a support, I think it's healthy for you, healthy for other people, of course. And I have absolutely been in the same position, especially as a teacher, as a coach, as a guide, especially as a coach. Now, the people who I don't even like with coaching, the fixing thing doesn't come to mind at all, because in that space, it's really just about helping people to enhance whatever is already there to meet their goals or whatever. But like that is the only space where I will really allow for that part of myself to open up and be and feel at home, because I was allowing that part of myself to feel at home, as you said, in all of my relationships and in the core relationships with my parents. And then I was like, this is, as you said, taking so much away from you. Now you have to pay me for that kind of stuff. Like you really have to, or you have to be in a certain kind of structured program. And that's to protect me. That's to protect my heart. That's to protect.
Absolutely.
Because in a pinch, I will be like, how can I help you? How can I support you? How can I take away your pain? Because I know that I have the capacity to hold it, but is that really the most helpful thing? And
it's not.
No. And if we're holding other people's stuff, how are we able to really deal with our own? And I think a lot of my initial, like trying to pour into other people, help other people, fix other people, was because I was trying to escape my own very deeply rooted stuff.
Absolutely. And I think that that's such a subconscious thought, like a lot of times fixtures are not even aware of that. And they're like, again, they're trying to like, this is like what they know best. You know what I'm saying? So it's just kind of like, I need to support. I need to be there. I need to basically lead them to the damn well. They're going to drink the water all the
above. Open up their mouth and put it down.
Right. And I'm just like, I feel like I found so much grace when I just like literally accepted one, like I can't control when people are ready to change. Yeah. You know what I'm saying? And love like does its best, I feel like, on both sides when it has boundaries. Love does its best when it's just like, I could hold your hand, but I'm not walking into it. You know what I'm saying?
Right. Like, I'm not going to put on your legs.
No, it's not. And I think that like what it came down to was really just me finding like the issue that I need to deal with. Like you said, I had to get to like, what am I ignoring? Like, what about, I need to heal the part that want to heal you.
Like, really? You
know, because that's seriously. Our responsibility.
Yeah. And for me, whenever talking, I feel like in a lot of episodes this season, this aspect of the people pleasing or the being too open or being overly available, the boundary setting is coming up a lot. I'm not surprised because of, you know, who we are. If someone's attracted to this podcast or this platform, typically you are a sensitive person, you're a really creative person, you have like energetically probably there is a need to really create boundaries, whereas some people already have boundaries. Their first answer is no about everything. Like my partner, I ask him something, he's like no, and then he says yes, whereas me, I'm like, huh, yeah, wait. You know, it's different. Everybody is different. So in that case, for me, it always comes down to personal power. And that's from my experience. And maybe it extends to other people. Maybe other people resonate with it too. But that aspect of like, if I am so quick to take on your pain or take on your burden, sometimes it is subconscious, right? It's energetic. You don't even know you're holding somebody something until they tell you it was resolved. And then all of a sudden you feel relaxed. I didn't even know I was tense holding onto your thing.
Right.
So how do we set ourselves up so that we can maintain that the boundary with love, as you said so nicely, and still not like, how do I put this? Because I really do feel like there's something here about personal power as I'm staring at this fire, this flame, this candle right in front of me. Because I know that when I'm in a position where I want to pour and give and give and give, in the position of like complaining or just being sad or the self-pity or like the victim mentality, like just listen to me, hold my emotions, like, because I've been in that position too. And on the other end, someone is pouring all of their emotions into one side of me and I'm pouring my emotions and I'm not holding my emotions, they're not holding their emotions. We talked about it in another episode. And then whoever they are, you know, they're over giving to is not holding their own emotions. We're all too busy giving our power away to the next person, as opposed to just holding that power, holding the intensity of the pain and learning how to manage it, or learning how to build the capacity around it, learning how to create wisdom through the pain and learning to create something through it, you know?
Right.
Yeah.
I think that's the season I'm in right now, is really trying to, because one of my biggest ways that I work through things is actually usually talking it through with someone close to me.
Yeah.
Or like journaling about it. But I feel like, because I also deal with anxiety, and then that's another like thing to navigate, of just kind of like, okay, is it my anxiety speaking, and how do I speak to those thoughts versus feeling like all these things are actually occurring? Because I do think that that's another emotion that's trying to teach you and tell you something, but then it's also something that's just like, oh, just think about this, versus like, you know, because I do think that like anything done in extremes, because if you're too heavy on your boundaries and you're saying no to everything, then that you're rigid, right? You're becoming an avoidant, right? But then also, if you're like that. You know, exactly. So I think I'm really trying to learn the balance of just like, no, I could do this, and I, you know, I could show up for this, but I can't show up for this. Or like, even in the capacity of like what I could take on in the aspect of support, you know what I'm saying? Like, I can only carry but so much. And I think that, yeah, the more I learn to like release and know that that too is love, and that I trust that they'll come to me. You know, one of my really close friends, we have a thing where it's like, I tell her like, you don't, like, I'm deserving of only what you clearly you want to share with me, you know? And I tell her too, like when she's going through something tough, like, it's just like, well, you tell me again what you have space for. You don't have to tell me everything. Like, I don't want to force you, I don't want to push you. But I've learned that over the years that she's received that in such a loving way of just like, wow, like so much other people are like forcing to get these emotions out of me. And she's like, I'm still processing, I'm still working through this. And I think that I was like, wow, like giving myself a pat on the back, because I didn't know how much that meant to her. I didn't know like again, we don't process things the same. And the best you could do is talk about it like, hey, I'm here whenever, but I don't have to like now dissect it. Cause I do think that, you know, moving in extremes is actually, it does more damage to your relationships than help them.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. My prayer for everybody is that if anybody resonates with that feeling of like that entitlement of needing to know someone else's business, whether it's someone close to you or not, I've totally been there. Like I have been the person all up in my nose in everybody else's business. I own it. I completely own it. And I own it because mm-hmm. I'm in a different place now where it's like, you are living your life. Do your thing. Do it. Do your thing.
Right.
Live your life.
That's it.
Enjoy your life, enjoy yourself, and
right.
enjoy your life. And I'll enjoy
my
choices. Yeah. Like, yeah. Like, yeah. You know, I validate the fact that you're alive. I don't need to validate your choices and whether they mean something to you. If they mean something
absolutely.
To you, that's great. Or on the other end, if someone needs to share something, right? I think it's beautiful, like how you've been able to hold that strength because it's not easy to do that, you know, especially if you've grown up in a situation where you haven't felt
opposite.
That. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Complete opposite. Let me know now. Or, you know, it's like a drill. Like it's right. very intense. And, you know, for some people, it goes back into it. It reverts into them. It's like they internalize it, you know? Yeah. So it's just kind of like, okay, well, you're not actually making it better. Again, now they don't want to talk to you now at all.
Right.
Not eventually, but now not at all.
So not at all.
Like, just let go. And I think that like, there's so much levels of being a fixer on like certain aspects of control or certain aspects of like feeling like the savior.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so it's just like, actually that's God's work, not mine.
No,
so,
it's
you
true.
Know, just learning to release.
Learning to release, learning to trust. The feeling yeah. like a savior is like, in a way it can be an ego driven thing, right? Like
ooh.
I need to be the one to save this situation, or I need to have my hand in the success of this situation.
It's like, I did this for you. So, and it's like, actually, it's like, the surface of it looks nice, but then the root of it looks not so nice. And it's just yeah. kind of like, actually, these don't connect. And a lot of times the people that are doing it, they're not putting two and two together. They're just moving in this very intense way. I'm going to be there. I'm going to cover all these things, this, that. And yeah, so I think that there was a lot of like I said, conditioning. I've learned therapy has been such a beautiful blessing that I've walked into within the last few years. Due to my anxiety, but it's like an onion layer. So you
yeah.
learn so much other aspects of yourself.
Yeah.
But it's been really, really helpful about just like seeing that reflection.
Yeah. I think one of the things that can be helpful for those who are in a position of like knowing that there needs to be change in their dynamic, their relationship dynamics, because this is kind of what we're talking about. Like there's some mm-hmm. strangeness happening in the relationship dynamics where yeah, it's not even. It doesn't feel secure. It doesn't feel like it's mature,
yeah.
secure that we can grow together. There's always some imbalance and someone is leaning too much on the other person. And there's this expectation, entitlement, you know, like mm-hmm, assumptions, mm-hmm. Feelings not met. I feel like people, we just need to take space and time for ourselves.
Yeah.
If we can just, yeah. you know, have some moments of pure quiet.
Yeah.
An extra 30 minutes here and there, find the space and time. And I know maybe some people feel like I don't have it. You have it, make it happen. I just have to
absolutely.
Say that. I just have to
yeah.
say, make it happen. You have this one life and there will always be a reason to, the world will always give us a reason to not prioritize ourselves, but rather to prioritize other people or to prioritize consumerism or to prioritize tradition or culture or this or that. But it's really our responsibility to prioritize ourselves and to be able to say no to something so we can make that space, so we can understand who we are and what's happening. That's the first step to anything, right?
Yeah.
But yeah, did you want to say something?
Oh no, I was just gonna say, yeah, lastly, I think that like it's always harder, I feel like, as women, and then the layer of being a Black woman, because like you're constantly like told that you're the caregiver, you know what I'm saying? Like you're
yeah.
the caretaker, like you're literally the backbone of everything. And it's just like, again, where do we make space for ourselves? Where do we make space for like our healing? Where do we make space for who is supporting me when I was feel like pouring so much other people's glasses, you know,
yeah.
Being there for them. I didn't know that I didn't know how to receive somebody
mm-hmm.
being there for me. And that happened within the last 2 years. I was like, I had some friendships that I had over the last 2 years that have poured into me in ways that I never even knew I needed.
Mm-hmm.
And that was such a wake up call to me of losing two other close friends and gaining two other, you know, other close
new,
friends that
yeah.
were doing the complete opposite thing for me. And I was just like, actually I'm not losing anything with
you're aligning things, you're becoming aligned
but it's like in that too, it's like, but when this is all you know, and oftentimes what you know is what you attract. You know what I'm saying? So it's very difficult to be like, actually, because I was able to have the opportunity to see something else and something better for me, it was just like, no, actually, I want those type of relationships. I want relationships where we could both pour into each other. I want relationships where we both value like where we each other are and like how to be each other's support system when needed. Because again, like it really comes down to the choice of like, do you want something different now that you even got the opportunity of it? Or do you want to go back to what you're conditioned to? Because comfort is always easy. It's change that's more difficult.
Yeah, absolutely. Well said. Well said. I'm going to make a pivot into talking about creativity and talking about the book that you're writing and like everything that you're learning through the process of creating this book. So, one of the questions that we have here in our the anchoring questions that I sent, who are you as a creator, Ajay?
Oh man.
What comes to mind first?
Yeah. I mean, I feel like every creative never wants to be in a box. And I think that's my biggest thing I think about as a creative, where it's like, I actually always wanted to be a writer since I was like a little girl. And like, I used to like journal a lot, write a lot of short stories. Oprah was like, you know, but when Oprah was just a journalist,
right.
Now she's like an empire, which I love, but I literally love. But yeah, like that was like my muse, you know? And it was like, honestly, like middle school, like I used to write for the like school newspaper. Like nice. I was just going, like that was my favorite outlet. And again, being so sensitive and not having like, you know, when you're a kid, your biggest outlet is your family, right? That's what you're used to seeing, things like that.
Your family is your whole world when you're a kid.
Yeah, literally. And like, you know, my family's all from Jamaica and it is literally a little tough in that culture.
Yeah.
It's a bit rough at times. Love it on so many levels, but you know, there is little room for sensitivity a lot of times in that space. Mm-hmm.
I'm Nigerian. I completely get it, girl.
I think we're literally the same.
When yeah.
I think Jamaicans are the Nigerians.
Oh, like of the Caribbean.
Literally, yes.
So funny. Like, I never heard that before.
I just feel like every time like I get to explore anything Nigerian, music, art, like any type of thing about that specific country, like it makes me directly think to Jamaica. Like,
that's so interesting.
I'm like, oh, those are my people, like literally.
That's so funny because I used to say for the longest time all roads lead to Jamaica. Like for me, all roads, I used to say all time. Like, so maybe there is something there with Jamaica and Nigeria.
No, I mean, but a lot of Jamaica is also like coming from, like we're coming from West Africa, so true. You know, within true. That like
same blood, yeah.
And yes, Nigerian space.
Are we cousins?
So we may be. I'm here for it. It wasn't really the space. I love talking about like culture stuff, so I always get like off track with that.
That was all
but
good.
Yeah, so
lean into it.
Yeah, like my like writing for me was the outlet where I can like be my most sensitive self, be my crybaby self, like go all into my emotions and everything, and it felt safe. I had no judgment. I had, you know, Ajay, you're not this and this, and totally. You know, all of those things. So I fell in love with that. But then I got into design when I was like probably 13, and that at the time I was very like black and white of thinking in the aspect of creativity. So it was like, if I'm gonna do this, I'm gonna do it to the highest extent. Yeah. And then that's how I pursued writing initially. And then when I transitioned to design, I just went with design, and I didn't write for a while. And I remember after college, like a year or so after, I was like, man, like I really like want to get back into it. And I initially started writing a book, but then that book didn't really feel like I like, as I grew on like just so much things within myself, I was like, this doesn't really identify with me anymore. So I was like,
right.
You know, put that aside. And then I started taking a bunch of courses in freelance writing. And I was like, you know what, let me get my hand more associated with writing different topics, and I end up loving it, and I still continuously do it, and I write for different online publications, and I write on spans of things from like race relations to feminism to relationship stuff to self-help stuff to wellness, mental health, like a lot.
It exposes you to so much, right? Like you get to sink into all of these topics in ways that you probably wouldn't have if you didn't have the opportunity to write for these publications in these ways, right?
Absolutely. So, and it opened my eyes up to just like, I get to learn so much in that process. Like a lot of things I'm writing, whether it be editorials or op-eds, like it's a lot of research, and I have to really think about like what spoke to me the most. And I noticed like it was such a big, one of my biggest clients is Exo Nicole. And that's literally an online publication that was founded by a Black woman, and it's for Black women, like a lot Love of the it. Content specifically. So I was like, oh, like the editor actually had reached out to me there, and I started writing for them, and I loved it. Like, it was just like, it became like my favorite place to write for. And the while Love I was it. Writing for other publications, I kind of dedicated more to that. And then in that space is when I was like, you know what, this is the time, like I should write a book about Black women. Like, this is the narrative. This is what I want to do. So I think gradually with that space, it led to Identity. And then the core of that book is really about kind of, it stems from my experience of being a Black, like a Black biracial woman, and I'm half Black and half Indian. But I always had such a complex way of, I don't know, like seeing the world in both lenses. And it had a lot to do with how I was raised. My parents split up when I was really young, when I was like 2. And then my dad was very in and out of my life, who was the Indian one. And my mom was the Black one. They're both Jamaican. But it was always more complex of like, I'm in Black spaces where I'm not Black enough. And then I'm in, you know, eyes of good here and, you know, Indian features or blah, blah, blah. And it made me very uncomfortable. And I remember when I was younger, I didn't really like negate the comments, but I didn't entertain them. You know, so,
they were just there. Like you didn't internalize it, but they were just there. Yeah.
They were there, and it was annoying, but it's like, again, I didn't really speak to them. And I think that like it was like, I was in Indian spaces where I'm not Indian enough. And then, you know, then it's like a lot of anti-Blackness, even in that space where it's just like, I don't feel often accepted. And then you have the Indian diaspora, and then explaining that of just like, well, there's a ton of Indians in the Caribbean that migrated there like literally 3 centuries ago or whatever. But it's like, again, do I want to give the history lesson? Do I want to give, you know what I'm saying? Now people saying I'm this and that. And I'm like, actually, girl, like, I'm not even trying to prove this to you. Like, it's been that was a little complex. Then the next layer of like, I'm from Brooklyn, New York, and I feel like the area I was grown up in, it was predominantly Caribbean. And again, it was just like, I didn't really have a switch of environment until I was in middle school, and I was in a super white neighborhood that made me feel extremely ostracized of being the darkest person in the class, and you know, the only person melanated for the most part, or just knowing the
different about the different one.
You know, then it was like, then there was like little like bits of African-American, but then that felt a little foreign too. It's like, okay, it's one thing to be in the culture with the music and this, that, but then it was like, I was like, all my friends that before was like all coming from Caribbean backgrounds.
Yeah.
So I think that like, it really, as I got older, it was just like, I didn't really have much friends from different African countries. Like, I didn't really know about, even understand the diaspora too, of like Afro Latinas and like that community. And like, it was just like, and then looking at the environment, the country we live in, and of like how little knowledge there is about us, like we're literally supposed to not know about each other. And I was like, this is a book. This is a book. And I was like, the book is about, I need to like speak to different Black women's cultural experiences that are in America, because like a lot of us, a lot of times culture is only talked about within our culture, right? Not collectively. And I think that like there's so much things that is changing that movement. I think music is a very pivotal point of that discussion of like, there's space for all of us. You know, so I think that I'm a very passionate person.
And I love it.
So I was like, I gotta do something that speaks to my heart. I gotta do something that like I could speak to, but I want to do something that is bigger than me. And that's really where the book came from.
That's amazing. Congratulations. I just want to touch on real quick, because we're taking like a meta lens as well. Like, yes, there is the project that you're working on, and then there is you who's working on the project, but then there is this, it seems to be this this guidance, this through line, this thread that is weaving through your experiences and creating something. This is even if you did just wake up one day with this idea, that would be beautiful, a beautiful drop of insight, right? But this is something that you kind of cultivated through time, through your experiences, through your like recognizing a sense of not belonging in certain areas and trying to create a sense of belonging through your own creation. So I just want to point that out in case someone listening is on a path where they feel like, I don't really know what I'm doing. I don't know all of my experience. Are they even making sense? Or am I following my true path? Well, if you stick with what your heart really wants, then things will make sense at the end. And maybe you'll end up creating something that really feels meaningful to you and that brings in community, because your project is not just about your experience, which is also a very worthy and beautiful thing if you were to write a memoir about your experience or whatever, but you're bringing people in from different communities that you feel like need to have a stronger bond with each other. So where are you at now with your project?
Oh my, it is still a journey to go.
Yeah. Yeah, for sure, for sure.
And it's hard. I'm not going to lie. This book is very difficult because I'm interviewing multiple different Black women from different Black diasporas, from the African community, whether that be first generation, that be immigrants, same thing with Caribbean community, Black Americans, like, I want this book to really amplify that Black people are not a monolith. And I think that, like, we have to release these chains of the mental capacity that we continuously, like, act like crabs in a barrel, like one's better than the other and this, that, and it's just like, stop. Like, you know, I think, like, it's difficult because it's like a combination of research, then on top of that interviews, and then on top of that writing it. It's like, it's such a flow. Every chapter I write, like, it feels different, like, you know. And I think that, like, my biggest thing is that, like, I want to give every community their flowers, you know, like, I want everyone to feel as seen. I mean, I cannot interview everybody from every single country, but I mean, I really try my best to get a variety, you know. So I'm like, okay, and then people from different neighborhoods, different parts of the country, different age groups, because I think that, like, even different immigrants coming at different times, because knowing my experience, it's so different. You know, my mom came here as a kid in the 80s. That feels so different, like, in comparison to, like, my stepdad that came in the 90s, or, you know, things like that, coming in like the 2000s, being a Black immigrant was not really well received, you know, on so many levels. So, and I think that a lot of that comes down to, we don't make space for, like, the nuances, and we literally, like, compare struggle. And I think that I just want this book to start a conversation with just, like, it's enough with the comparing struggles. Like, we all come here for one specific reason. And, like, a lot of time people move for economical reasons. It's not because they hate where they come from or this, that. It's like, we're all trying to get opportunities. You know, anti-Blackness is a worldwide thing. And I think that, like, you know, a lot of things, I feel like sometime in this country, a lot of too much people are, like, traveling, but they're not educating themselves around that space. And I think that, like, that's really essential, because once you know that this is not just an American thing, like, I'm just literally talking about different Black diasporas that are located in the country.
Yeah.
But they look,
it can be extended.
Different.
Yeah.
It could be extended all over the place. And that's what I'm saying. I just want this book to be a teaching aspect, because, again, like, I think a lot of it has to do with, like, I was lacking the accessibility to be in spaces that had multiple different Black people and those things, and to understand what that is, right? Like, I've had very uncomfortable conversations with some of my friends from different cultures, and we had to combat some very heavy stereotypes, or, you know, what they may be thinking in this thought. And it's like, okay, we could talk about it, you know, but again, it's like, it doesn't really get resolved if we don't talk about it.
Right.
Like, it just continues, it perpetuates the same message over and over.
Yeah, no, it's true. I mean, I feel like with the desire you have for the book to be a teaching moment or an opportunity to just, like, build capacity and build wisdom, hey, if you focus on just letting it be that, and then it will, you know, because with these written works that we put out, people who read it are going to interpret it in the way that they want to interpret it. We all are just seeing life and experiencing life in the way that we want to, or the way that we have the capacity to. Like, it's all extremely subjective, as you said before, very personalized. And as a creator, I just feel like it's so important to be very clear as you are on how you want the thing to be received, or what essence you want to create when you're putting this thing together, when you're working on it. Like, what energy do you want to imbue in it, and just let it be. Like, it's going to be what it's going to be, but for you, it's going to be this thing. And it's an amazing project. I'm happy to take part in it myself, you know?
Yes, I know. I'm so happy to have you.
Yeah. Like, when that was, like, back in the summer, last summer, 2022. And to just, like, review those questions and think about my experience personally, it really had me, like, just, you know, deepening in ways that sometimes I'm just like, but I don't want to. I want to ask other people to deepen in ways, but I don't want to deepen.
Yeah.
I just want to ask people to deepen into themselves, because in my experience being a first generation Nigerian American, but having emigrated out of the US and lived in all these different places, and don't feel home in the US. I don't feel home in Nigeria. I don't feel home in Black culture in many cases, in all cases, and in other cultures. I just feel like I'm just in my own little universe, my own little world, and I just create the way. But when you ask these questions, it gave me the opportunity to sink into what are my roots? What I am a Nigerian person. I am fully Black, fully brown, fully everything about me is Nigerian.
Right.
Down to my flat ass feet. Everything is Nigerian. I can't escape it. So what is it here that can be supportive and like bringing out of my heart, bringing out of my experience, bringing out from my own upbringing and the culture that I forgot we used to do that. Today I was actually singing a song that my mom used to sing to us before going to sleep every night when we were kids, or most nights. I don't know every night. I don't know about that. But like in the nighttime when we were kids, and it's something that her mom used to sing to her. I'm like, damn. And I'm just like out here traveling the world, forgetting my roots. Like that's it's a beautiful thing that's passed down through generations. And
it
came to my mind. I'm like, that is just a beautiful aspect of my life that sometimes when we just get into the world, especially those of us who are traveling a lot or who are like really friendly with other cultures and have that accessibility to other cultures, sometimes we, you know, kind of step away from our roots for a little bit. And then there's that guilt. So having the opportunity to be present with your work a bit just gave me a chance to kind of reduce the guilt a bit and just be with myself in a different way.
That's interesting. It's interesting to hear that insight, because I usually don't hear like people just answer the questions.
And they send it, right?
Like, oh, thanks for including me in this. I'm so excited and da-da-da. Like, tell me how it makes them feel. And I think that like, it's so nice that like it's hearing your feedback of like the experience of answering it and like sitting with that. I think the most thing that I was thinking about when hearing you just even explain that was just like, there is no one type of Nigerian, you know, like you are allowed to be as multifaceted of a being and as nomad as you'd like and in and out of whatever community, and you're still Nigerian, you know, like, so I think that part is like, it's a struggle though, you know, because again, it's like, if you're not down with these type of things, it's like, okay, well, you're not really Nigerian. You know what I'm saying?
Like, and then your parents and your aunties and uncles are always asking you, like, I was in California at this point. Okay, I was in California in January for a couple of days, met with some relatives who are visiting from Nigeria. One of the first questions they asked me is like, when are you going to move to Nigeria? I said, first of all, why would that even come out? I'm not moving to Nigeria. What am I doing in Nigeria? Like, why am I moving to Nigeria? For what? What am I doing in Nigeria? You know, like that is the expectation that they have, but they're of a different generation.
I love your accent that just came out too.
For what?
The gestures and everything.
you want to talk to me like that? I'm going to talk to you like that too, man.
Right. Like, but I love, like, I mean, at the end of the day too, older generations, it's like they're, you know, different. Not to say everybody, but some people, it's very just like one way of life, one with this. But I think that like, that's what's so beautiful about our generation is that like, we're changing just the lens of what that may look like. You know what I'm saying? Like there's, it's such an untraditional thing that what you're doing, living as nomad as you are, doing all these things, it's honestly so aspiring. I think more people would love to do it. They're just afraid.
And it is scary. And I know why it is a scary thing, especially when you are in the position of breaking the mold, right? Like your parents are very traditional and you can see they try. You feel like I tell you what I'm, you, they have known since I was a kid that I do things my own way. Like it could be a path set straight with all of the things. And I'm like, no, I'll take this path that is not even a path, and I'll create a path, you know, when everything is just set up in that way. And then they're still questioning me 30 years later that I'm doing something. You should have known this was coming. And then we have a conversation about it. And then they're like, okay. And then 2 months later, we talk and they're like, why don't I have grandchildren? What are you doing there? What do you mean to yourself? All these things. And it's like, okay, so you completely forgot everything. So I think in the position that we are in this generation of like changing things and being different and multicultural, multiracial, all of this stuff, it's important to really focus. I mean, in anybody's case, right? To focus on the life that we really want to cultivate, which is the life that we're building, rather than, and this is really a note for myself, something I realized recently. I think it was that trip in California. That's where my family lives. That's why I mention it. But realizing that I've been looking at the past too much in that way. I've been looking at them too much for my cues for how to move forward. They are not, they have their own lives, their own journeys, and they cannot see my the vision for my path the way that I can, because they are not me. They're not in my position. They're not in my generation. They don't have the same tools. They don't have the same access. They don't have the same this, that, or the other thing that I have. They have their own mm-hmm. stuff, and they have to live their journey. I can't live their journey for them, even if they're trying to pull me in some way here or there right. into their path so they can, you know, live a life that they didn't. I don't know what the situation is, but my focus was too much on that. And that's why I was dissatisfied and feeling resentment towards them. But it doesn't have to be like that. Yeah.
But I do think that, like, it's normal, though, because it's what you've known for so long. It's your family. It's their morals. It's, like, again, feeling the guilt of, like, why aren't these my morals? I deal with that, too, all the time. Like, I tell my mom I'm a rebel, and I've been a rebel, so why are you shocked now? You know, like,
that's
I'm
the thing.
Very, like, I'm probably, like, the most, like...
She's a sensitive rebel, everybody. Love it.
Yeah. Definitely, like, the most sensitive, probably, like... No, probably my last sister is most sensitive, but that's a whole other topic. But most probably combative, and I think that, like, I felt guilty for not feeling like, why don't I want those things that my mom wants? Why don't I want those things my family wants or whatever? And then it just came down to acceptance. And, like, you know, I read somewhere, I'm paraphrasing now, but, like, that, like, another level of emotional maturity is looking at, I think it was in, was it the Bell Hooks book? I'm reading this Bell Hooks book right now. I'm not sure, but I read it somewhere. But, like, another level of emotional maturity comes from, like, okay, this is my mom, but I don't have to be a duplicate of my mom. And
right.
I was just like, oh my God. Like, the pressure that we subconsciously feel like we have to be these next versions, these 2.0s of this, like, the expectation from them, from other family, from friends, from society itself, you know? And it's just like, actually, but my moral compass is in a different direction. And I think that the more I'm okay with that, it's a different direction. And that's that, you know, like, I think, like, half my battle felt solved when I just accepted it.
Yeah. I think that's the capacity that comes when you allow, you know, coming back to, like, the earlier part of our conversation of, I think it's the same like technology, the same inner technology, the same mechanism inside that we can allow ourselves to experience strong emotions or strong energy and not have to immediately, like, suppress it or project it and just hold it, is the same that allows us to accept things that, like, we don't have the answers to, or that, you know, we just have to accept for the rest of our life. That's not like a giving up kind of thing. There's a very big difference between giving up and just surrendering and allowing life to take you on any which way and not exercising personal power, and then just accepting that, like, okay, I'm different and I have my own journey. And, but that's a big thing about trust, right? Like, being in the unknown and allowing things to unfold as you go.
And I think it comes down to a lot with, like, alignment. And I feel like if you feel aligned with something or someone, you invest in it, you know, you capitalize on it and you build on it. And things that you don't feel as, like, invested in or aligned with, it's just kind of like, you just let it be. And it's like, okay, family is one of those things where it's like, again, like, I think traditional aspects of a lot of things, it feels very forced. It doesn't feel authentic. Yeah. It doesn't feel like there's room to me. And that doesn't feel like, it feels like a very conditional love. You know what I'm saying? It's like, you, if I do this, you get this. If I, you have my kid, you know, give me grandkids, I'm gonna love you more.
Exactly.
You got married.
Yes, exactly.
Like, girl, I don't know when I'm gonna have kids. I don't know when I'm gonna have a man. I don't know all of these things on my face.
And you're not gonna love me because I don't know these things, or I don't have these things ready for you to hand to you. Yeah.
And it's just kind of like, but a lot of that, it's like, I can't change them, but how do I change my perspective on this? And I think, It's a journey. And I think that you keep having to talk to those parts of yourself. But the more I do it, the stronger I feel in my stance.
Mm-hmm. No, that's helpful. I needed to hear that, because, you know, there's a part of us that reverts back to, or, you know, depending on how we look at it, maybe the child part of us comes to the surface when we're with our parents in some way or another. And it's like, I know that personally, I have these expectations for my parents to be my parents. And I want to be a kid. When I'm with you, please, I'm a child. This is the place where I want to have the hissy fit. I want to have my way. I want you to pay for things. I want you to buy me presents and give me chocolate like you did when you were kids. And one of my parents, in my perspective, doesn't have that emotional capacity to hold my emotions because they can't hold their emotions. The other one has more than
that part.
Yeah. So there is there's like that switch, right? Like if one of your parents can't hold their emotions and they can't hold your emotions, sometimes, yes, you become the one that has to hold their emotions. And then you become the one that holds everybody's emotions. And then you become the one that doesn't know how to hold your emotions until you become the one that knows how to hold your emotions and tells everyone else to go and learn how to hold their own emotions, you know? But that happens with time. It's all, as you said, as you keep saying, it's all a journey. And like having to talk to those parts of yourself again and again and just be like, it's all right. We are here. We're not going anywhere. You woke up another day. We're going to do it again. Make some pancakes, get settled in because we're going to do it again.
No, I know. And I think a lot of that too, it's like releasing the fact that like, oh my gosh, the expectation of like, I want my parents to be this super safe space. But I think that like friendship and like finding people that other are really for you that could be family or not. Like, I think that there's been so much liberation and freedom, which is like, wow, like these people could do amazing things. And like, that to me is like chosen family. And I'm like, in so many ways, I'm like, I didn't have everything I wanted, but I have everything I need.
Right.
And I think like that realization, like it brought tears to my eyes in so many ways of like not having a very traditional family, like just the outlook initially, like, I think what I'm constantly doing now, instead of being this super pouring into so many other people, it's like I'm always speaking to like the little girl in me.
Yeah.
And I feel like I'm writing her. I feel like every time I feel like I'm really like in a very emotional pit, it's like I feel like I'm trying to sit down with her and really just like meet her where she's at. I'm just like, where is this coming from? Like, you know, before I like because also with your parents is the first people you do also want to accept every aspect of you and every love last aspect of you. It's like you always want their approval, like that part.
It's like you want them to accept you before you even can accept yourself, because they were quote unquote meant to accept you before you even knew what concepts were, right?
Absolutely.
What self-acceptance was, right? Yeah, exactly.
So it just comes in, the more work you do on yourself, I do feel like you said, it's just like one parent that's just like, they don't even have the capacity for themselves. So why do you think they don't have capacity for you? They don't even, the math ain't even math.
I love when people say that. It's so funny.
No, but it's just like, it's true. Like, and then when I realized that, I was just like, wow, like, I feel like I'm begging from a space that like cannot provide. So it's like, it feels like scarcity. So what if I shifted that and got it from other spaces, and I still get the love and more that I even wanted. But again, that had a lot to do with me pivoting, because all I can control is myself.
Exactly. And also changing that narrative and seeing this is nothing revolutionary. I say this so much on this podcast. It's nothing revolutionary. It's just a reminder again that like, we're all children. We're all teenagers all the time. Like once you get to these stages in physical life, you remain that person. Like, my parents are still their children selves, dealing with their own situations with their own parents, you know, even now, they're dealing with that. And maybe the situation was a lot more dire. Maybe it felt a lot more, I don't know, just maybe it felt different, but they're still holding on to that. So potentially the parent who doesn't feel like they can love their child, maybe they never felt like they got enough love, or maybe their parent died really early in their life and they're still grieving 60, 70 years later, still grieving their mother, still, you know, and then what aspect of their mother that was the ancestral thing, right? Like what was birthed into this child that they couldn't necessarily heal or move through and just held on to, and now we as the children have to hold on to it or have to move through it. And what if there are things that we're not able to move through, and one day people are going to come from us or come from, or we're going to influence another generation that comes after us. When I see the wrinkles on my face and my little sunspots and my little gray hairs and all these things coming, I'm like, I am turning into an old person slowly, but I am getting there. And I will be there one day, and I will pray and wish and hope that people who are younger than me give me the opportunity to remain my child self. Because at 29, I'm a kid still. Yes, I have so much responsibility that I've given to myself, and it makes me feel good and adult with my bank accounts and my this and my that and that.
But
at the same time, I'm still a kid. So my parents are still children. And at some point I had to be like, this resentment that I'm holding on to, like one Chanel purse, like it's like my favorite, my parental resentment is just here. Like, look at it. Look, look at it. What is that doing for you, girl? And then one day you realize it's a damn knockoff. It's not even real. It's nothing. It's hot air.
Knockoff, I'm weak.
It's hot air. It doesn't do anything for you. It doesn't do anything for them. All it does is keep you weighed down and keep you looking at the past when you should be looking at your future. So yeah, I mean, that was very helpful for me to hear your perspective, you know, and to understand, like, I'm not alone in this, and the passion comes through in every aspect. It's totally going to come through in this aspect too. But
yeah,
continue to have those conversations with self, create the space, take the space, breathe, be, channel the energy. Notes to myself.
Like one day at a time. And I think that I just, more than anything, I'm fixated on being present, understanding, like, you know, when things do come up, whether it be parental, whether it be familial, whatever it is that is a heightened emotion, I'm just like, don't speak to that heightened emotion.
Yeah.
Sit with it. Mm. You know, because I think the most beautiful thing about emotions is they're constantly trying to teach us. Mm. And I think that there's so much expectations, even when we talk about family, especially our parents, because they're like, they're looked at as superhuman,
right,
to us. And it's just like, again, like you said, of what if we could lend that, you know, compassion and the empathy to them? Like, what if we could just take off the expectation of them constantly trying to meet our need? And like, how do we kind of like do, like, you know, in between, how do we kind of, and it's hard, it's really a battle. I, you know, go in and out of this mindset. But I think like the more I'm able to refrain and just like stop and pause instead of like respond, act, you know, this, that, it's just like, because a lot of times we're not even fully acting from the present. We're acting from accumulation of past things.
Yeah.
That, like, you know, doesn't even, it's like, okay, you say you want the pattern to change as well, but are you really studying the pattern? Right? Like, are you really releasing certain things? Because at the end of the day, it's like one of the most, I think, recycled phrases there is just like, forgiveness is for you, you know? But it's really like one of those things where it's like, it's so hard. Like, it's like grief, you know, it's like when you have these expectations of like wanting to love this person for infinity and having them physically here with you, and that doesn't happen. And then you hold on to just wishing more and more of this could occur, you know? And it's just kind of like, what if I allow that, like, that is not that anymore. And how do I speak to right now?
Yeah.
Like, you know, like, I'm going to still always love that person and care for that person. And I don't have to hold on to what this was. I feel like there's also peace in that and the same alignment. That was such a metaphor of, like, you know, of the peace that we have with just like not holding on to the grief because our parents didn't meet these expectations in certain parts of our lives. And it's just like, it's okay. It's okay, because at the end of the day, like, I worked through it. Like, I worked through it in the way I knew how in that time. And now I have the opportunity to do better. And what do I want to do with that?
And work through it in different ways, right?
Yeah,
like, and
that's
just
it.
Move on with life. Like, we're here, we're human. We're here. I mean, I don't know. I always feel like whenever I get to this point of, well, what I'm gonna do? What? I'm sitting here with these feelings. I'm sitting here with all these experiences, and I'm just adding more experiences of my life in total on top of my my past experiences and the experiences of others that I'm holding on to as well. And I'm just sitting here with all of that. What am I supposed to do with that? Well, I'm human, so that's it.
Right.
Like, I have to find a way, whether it's this way or that way, and it has to be a way that works the best for me in any which kind of way. And it's unfortunately for those of us who love science and who love guarantees and who just want the pain to go away right
certainty.
Now, immediate
yes,
certainty.
Exactly.
It's not that kind of experience.
Yeah.
It's not that. It's like, you need to tap into the strength that you have as a human. Humans are the most incredible creatures that I have ever been. I've actually one of them. We're incredible creatures. There's a world out here that is trying to make us feel like we are incapable, that we are angry, that we are full of destruction, that we are just like awful creatures that will just destroy the world and destroy everything. But there is a part of us that is just so capable of extreme peace and extreme magic and extreme love and just like beauty. And this is the part that I try to lean into. I think it's very similar to you, like leaning into the capacity to just be in the present moment, just experiencing what is right here, right now. So wise, my friend. So wise.
Oh, thank you. Thank you. I appreciate it.
I
I'm
love
humbled.
So beautiful. I love this conversation. I love the direction that it took. I did not know that it was going to take that kind of direction, but I'm happy because it feels like before we got on, I was like, and I usually set a candle, like light a candle, and I just say, what is it, like a hope, a wish, a prayer, an affirmation, whatever. Just like let this conversation be what it needs to be for both of us now and for whoever listens whenever they hear it. So it was what it needed to be for me, and I hope that it was for you too. So thank you so much for being on this podcast, Ajay.
Thank you for having me. Yeah, I really, you know what? It was really like when I was listening to multiple podcasts and I was like, ooh, like this is a feelings podcast. Like this, I can really like express myself. So I feel like I was just like, I'm gonna let myself be vulnerable in multiple aspects and let's see how it is. So yeah, I definitely felt a space that was a home, you know,
Thank
in another
you.
way for me. So I really appreciate you having me on here as well.
You're always welcome. And is there any place that you'd like to be found by the people? If anyone like wants to get in touch with you for whatever reason, if people want to know more about your book or anything that you're doing, anywhere, if you want to be found, where would that be?
Right, if I do want to be found.
Because that's a choice, you know?
That is a choice. That is, I guess, yeah, the notes to self, the notes to self love notes on Instagram. That's my writing blog page where like I post like my writing post blogs, or I do freelance posts that I'll do book reviews when I'm ready. It's very just a very free, liberal writing space. And then when I'm ready too, I'll talk about, you know, me working on my book, or I'll do call outs for people I want to interview for the book Black Woman.
That's how I label it, yeah.
So that's probably the best way to contact me. And the book is still in progress. Still a bunch to do with it. So I don't really have per se a date for it, but it's continuous. And I used to be really hard on myself about that, because I'm very like goal oriented. Like
Yeah.
I need a deadline. But now I'm just kind of be like, oh, let it be. This is something that is going to be constantly, you know, something innate.
Right.
Is identity never gets old, you
Never.
know,
It's timeless.
discovering that space for that, you know. So whether this book is delivered in the next year or two or the next three, four, God, I hope not. you know, it'll speak to someone. I do believe that. And that's all my goal is with this book, and anything I do write is just like speaking to people's heart. And you're in this together. We're figuring it out.
Wow, so beautiful. Thank you. And I'll add your contact information in the show notes for those who want to contact you that directly. Thank you again, and thank you for everyone who's listening to this podcast, wherever you're at in the world, whatever you listen to it in this timeline of space and time and everything. Hope that you got some gems. Hope that you felt something through the conversation. Whether it was a feeling of resonance or a feeling of extreme dislike, at least you're feeling. And that's important because that's how we understand who we are and what we actually, the meaning that we make out of our interactions in the world. That's important. So if you want to stay in contact with us, you can do so on Instagram at Wellspring Words. You can send us an email at bewell@wellspringwords.love. Check out wellspringwords.love online to see what we have going on the platform, writing workshops, writing coaching. This podcast, the digital anthology. There's a lot of things, writing courses and writing fellowship, tons of things there. A place for you to just be yourself and be easy. So, thank you, and talk to you in the next episode. Bye.